this place smells like
$15 an hour.
Hippies and bacon. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from a bug-infested sweatshop deep in the heart of somewhere I can't remember because...
Somalia.
Because the blue jeans aren't the only thing that are acid-washed tonight.
I thought that was last night.
Yeah. It's actually not that hot in here tonight.
No, it's not bad at all. It's really nice and cool because our air conditioner, just like the Freedom Fiends, is covered by a BIPCOT no government license, which allows reuse by anyone except for governments. For learn more, go to BIPCOT.org. And didn't someone get BIPCOTed today?
Yes.
Jay's bad face is getting BIPCOTed right now. As we speak. It's either,
well,
you know,
yes,
when the drummer in Bomb
He's not asleep yet.
When the drummer in Bomb quit the band and we had all of these promo shots taken of the band already, and we didn't want to pay for new ones, we just got a bunch of Mr. Yuck stickers and put them over his face on 1,000 promo pictures. It was kind of fun.
Yeah.
And
Mr. Yuck.
That sounds very exciting.
Mr. Yuck. Did I say Mr. Poison? Mr. Yuck.
I think you said Mr. Yuck, but the question remains, who is Mr. Yuck?
I don't know what that is.
Oh, Mr. Yuck is something. You have to be old to know it, I guess. They used to, it was like a smiley face that was frowning with like X'd out eyes to put on bottles of poison. You could get all these
like
stickers from the county.
Yeah, I think that's it, Dobby.
Is
Nirvana shirt Mr. Yuck?
Yeah.
What?
There you go.
Yes, it is.
What?
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Speaking of old people and bands, I had a total experience today. Yeah, I went to the vet today.
It was awesome
with my cat Beast, my cat Beastie Boy, and the young cute vet tech lady was like, "Oh, Beastie Boy, did you name him after the band? My mom loves them."
Isn't that special?
So you guys went on a fiend field trip today.
Field trip.
I directed.
Yes, we
field trip. To an empty plot of dirt.
Listen, well, some of us did.
Why
some
did
of
us
say, found it?
Are you creating?
Michael, I'm the one that found
rumors,
it.
Dobby, that the body's not there.
No, this is hearsay.
No, it's just
they dug the body
here.
Up to confirm it. They got it with. You got it propped up on the fiend's dais.
Right next to the sign that says 0 days since cussing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Burning. So I've been thinking
weekend
about this
with,
for a while.
With Gigi.
Yeah.
I visited a graveyard in Atlanta where I found a barker named Charles Barker. And this guy, I'm not going to say what he was on the air. But his epitaph. What's written on his tombstone is proud editor and producer of The Prohibitionist. And he apparently wrote this magazine.
Your relatives are square.
So I have this idea. I want to create a fraudulent tombstone and sneak it in somewhere and like see how long it stays there. Because nobody wants to disrupt a grave. You know, like you want to be really sure that's the wrong tombstone before you take it out, right?
I want to disrupt a grave. We kind of did today.
Well, yeah.
Dobby just wants a zombie Gigi Allen running around Porkfest.
He's a ghost, man. Didn't you know Rogers Campground was built on the ancient burial ground of Gigi Allen, and he's been haunting Porkfest all week long.
It's true.
So who went to the grave today? And Nicole, I need
none of them. I did.
You got some pictures of G. Jones' grave.
Oh, we sent you pictures.
There's some pictures. More will be forthcoming once our photographer can get to her computer.
So it was cool. Derek J. and Jeremy and myself and Nicole and Joe and Nick. Of course, Nick. Where's Nick?
Nick's right there.
There he is.
Well, Nick never says anything.
Did Nick lose his virginity on Gigi Allen's grave?
He lost his virginity for sure.
Yeah. There wasn't a high enough bidder. Yeah. They didn't meet the reserve requirements. So it's going back into a new auction.
Yeah, it's still up for grabs.
Gigi Allen's grave, for people that don't know, Gigi Allen is a dead rock musician who had a huge underground following, who was trying to bring the danger back to rock and roll. He would cut himself and poop on stage and cut himself and then roll in the poop after cutting himself. And he said he liked
to rape people on stage. So he's trying to bring sepsis back to rock and roll?
Yes. Yes.
So he, exactly. Yes, he was my drunken uncle.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was born really near Porkfest. He was born at the hospital you go to if you have to go to the hospital for Porkfest, the one like, you know, 6 miles up the road. But about 30 miles up the road.
I may end up in the hospital for Porkfest. Just for the record, I just may end up there.
You mean free aid?
From what?
There's a good way to cover your tracks.
No, I mean like if free aid is, can't do it, if you need surgery or something. So he's buried in a Catholic cemetery about a half hour from Porkfest. And at my suggestion, y'all took a field trip. You took Nick on a field trip. It was take your son to GGL and grave.
He was all smiles the whole time. Yeah.
Nice. And you guys took pictures, and I wanted to know the exact GPS coordinates because it's kind of hard to find G.G. Allen's grave. Like, there's all sorts of websites, and there's like 1,000 words describing how to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And to make it even harder, the priest that owns the cemetery has removed the headstone completely because he's sick of tourists like you guys showing up and peeing and having sex on his grave, on Gigi's grave.
It's not even...
That's Christian shit, man. That's what Saudi Arabia does.
Michael,
they get worried about people worshiping at graves, and so they desecrate the graves.
Michael, there's like absolutely nothing there now. It's only just the evidence of there having been something there.
Yeah, it's just dirt.
I know.
Yeah.
But it's... I don't think they've moved his body.
No. You can see there. Where the...
They moved the headstones, but they didn't
they
move
the
body.
And they moved the headstone and the slab that it was on.
That's the tagline.
They took that completely away. It's just like a bare spot of dirt there.
Yeah, well, right now it's a bare spot of dirt with a Bipcot flag sticking in it, right?
Yeah.
This is absolutely true.
Left a small flag sticking in it. Yeah.
Yes.
Nice.
And us doing things on the grave.
Hey, who's hogging all the cell phone
signal?
Did
you smoke weed? Did you have sex with Nick?
Yeah, well,
we all had sex with Nick.
Some of the above.
Just passed him around like a joint.
Don't Bogart.
Well, if I can get all the video from you guys tomorrow and all the pictures, and if you can confirm exactly, like send me an X on a map that you all three or four agree on of where it was, I'm going to make a free app for the Android store called Find G.G. Allen's Grave. It's going to be an app. That takes you there. Now, I was going to call it Help I'm Being Bullied at G.G. Allen's Grave because that's what the cell 411 alert was called, and I thought it was pretty funny, but that's too long of a name for the Google Play Store, so it's just going to be called
Help I'm Being Bullied, really?
It's just going to be, yes, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Derek J and I set up a private cell called G.G. Allen's Grave, and Derek sent me a cell 411 alert that said, "Help, I'm being bullied."
Wow, this would be the biggest thing since Angry Birds, I suspect.
As soon as I get all the, it's bigger than Angry Birds. And as soon as I get all the media from you guys and the exact location, I will make the app tomorrow. So the thing is, like, Google doesn't give you the exact location. It said basically that when you were standing on the grave, it said that you were standing in the road, like 50 feet from the grave. I guess that's so, like, we can't, like, guide libertarian missiles with Google.
Bummer.
Why would there be libertarian missiles?
So tell me about the experience.
When's the Where's GG app coming? You know, like Where's Waldo?
That's what it should be
called. I love Chandler with that pink mic, man. I swear.
Brought that up from home, didn't you, Chandler? Well, it was an interesting experience, and the app will definitely help other people in the future because, I mean, we actually had to follow a set of pictures in order to find the darn thing.
Yeah. I found it. I'm the one that found it. Just saying.
Yeah. Yes, Diana, you can have the credit, all right?
Thank you.
Now, you're absolutely positive that you found the unmarked location.
Yes.
Boy, I sure hope you peed on his grave and not somebody else's.
like a what, puke wedgie?
No, that would help us in that case.
Yeah, it's their natural repellent.
I think we had one stalking us last night, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Well, we heard the Pringles can.
Yes,
I did
we
not.
Did.
I didn't hear the cat
did.
Screaming.
We actually ended up with one.
Yes.
Click Chandler with a card.
I think I'm missing something here. What the happy Halloween are you guys talking about?
You don't know about the puke wedgie? You didn't hear the whole thing about the puke wedgie?
No, I was here for that.
Right.
It sounds like there's
something. We went on a puke wedgie hunt.
Oh,
after the show.
There's things that happen after you go to bed, Grandpa. All right? So, you know.
Wait, somebody grab the camera.
Don't. So we've discovered that the mating call of the puke wedgie sounds very much like a screaming cat. And so if you're in the woods and you hear a screaming cat, you might want to steer clear and wet yourself. But hey, they also enjoy Pringles. So if you hear the opening of a
what
Pringles,
was the Pringles ghost name that we came up with?
Wasn't it Mr. Pringles?
Sam
Pringle.
Sam Pringle, that's what it was.
How did I miss that?
I don't know.
But I kept hearing about the crinkling Pringle cans.
Right.
So.
Very interesting.
It's their favorite food.
Really?
Yeah.
Do they get the 2-for-1 special?
I don't think they buy them. I think they
scrounge. No, they get the early bird special.
So I think they steal them from people's campsites.
First defecated on stage in 1985 at a show in Peoria, Illinois.
This is why the Oxford comma is important.
Is that yes. Yeah. I want to thank what is it? I want to thank my mother and father, God, and what's that one? Yeah. But I'm wondering if, like, since he first pooed on the stage in Peoria, Illinois, if that's where the saying, will it play in Peoria, came from.
Nice. I like cooking, my family, and pets.
That's it. That's the one. Yeah.
More Freedom Feast coming up after this.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to the Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Service announcement. No humans on the furniture in here. Dogs are just fine.
we have a canine guest. That's wonderful.
Yeah, we have a couple canine guests in here.
Where's the doggy?
And they all need,
doggy?
They all need longer leashes.
Oh, it's Toki.
Or no.
Hey, Toki.
No, there's one behind you.
Oh.
It's holding a knife. Look
oh,
out.
You all need to check your dogs dominant galore. Species privilege.
So anyway, we're going to welcome a guest to the show. It is Will Moyer. He was one of the presenters here today. He was over in the Alt Expo. And say hello, Will.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
And I said say hello, Will.
Hello, Will.
So what's the website? Because you're a writer, and then you also have a podcast, too. So
yeah, most of my writing is on my personal site, willmoyer.com. But C4SS, Center for Stateless Society, also runs some of my articles, so you can find stuff there. And, yeah, I have a podcast. It's about movies and TV shows, and it's a totally original idea for a podcast.
Yeah, kind of like the Freedom Feast.
It's whyyoucare.fm. You can find that. And it's not really overtly political or anything, but our politics kind of comes through when we're talking about other stuff.
Is it letter Y, letter U, care?
No, or? Full
Oh, it's
full
actually
words.
Spelled out?
Yeah, why okay. do you care?
All right, so you're not lazy then. Okay, no. Good. Okay. So you gave a presentation today over at Alt Expo, and I caught like a couple minutes of it because I was like, you know, just
sure.
actually pay attention and listen to stuff. I have to bug out. So what were you talking about today? Because part of it was about, I think it's libertarians and addressing dissent.
Yeah, it was called Libertarians and Policing Dissent. And it was about what I perceive within the libertarian movement kind of approving of some forms of dissent and resistance against like state power and the establishment, and then kind of delegitimizing other kinds. And I think libertarians kind of present that like they're doing it based on objective things like the non-aggression principle, but I think in reality, a lot of times it's cultural biases or other kinds of biases that are leading them to maybe not support more like leftist-y kinds of dissent, something like Occupy or Black Lives Matter or even the anti-Trump protesters. It's typically more associated with like, you know, leftism. But I think that they have legitimate elements of real dissent against the establishment and against authoritarianism.
Right. Well, you're in luck tonight because we do have an Occupy expert in here, our resident expert, Davi Barker. So,
what, me? Oh, okay, yeah. I went. All right, I was an occupant.
All right, so let's talk about Occupy a little bit. Sure. And the libertarian reaction as you perceive it.
I mean, I think the general kind of consensus was this is a bunch of economically illiterate kind of young people. Maybe they're entitled. Yeah. Their goals are socialist-y in nature.
Socialist-y.
Yeah, socialistic.
Socialist-ish.
And
that sounds so German.
they didn't have like kind of some coherent ideology. They don't even know the root causes of the problems that they're upset with.
You're not a carpenter, but you nailed it.
Well, that was kind of what Occupy admitted, was that they didn't have a central mission or a central. It was not like everybody was there for the same reason or whatever.
Right.
But there was definitely a libertarian contingent at the occupations that I went to.
Sure.
And they were mostly shouted out and pushed away from the mic. So
yeah.
Occupy didn't want libertarians there.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't blame libertarians when they're kind of, they're doing outreach or they're trying to find solidarity with these groups and they're pushing them away. But I wasn't actively involved in anything in Occupy. I was just kind of watching from afar. I was out of
the
country.
So I slept on the street in front of the Federal Reserve in San Francisco for about a week.
Nice.
And then once that occupation was moved to some park somewhere, I went over to Occupy Oakland and I got tear gassed. Yay!
That's awesome. I mean, congrats.
I'll be glad when I have no responsibilities and I can get tear gassed.
But I got to, you know, get on my megaphone and scream about the Federal Reserve.
Nice.
And I learned all the hand motions and things enough that I could go to the General Assemblies and sort of, I ended up at times being like the sole dissenter, which I'm so glad that at the very beginning it was a unanimous consent thing, because I got to actually veto people destroying property and things like that. And
you were like filibustering.
Yeah.
Rand Barker.
But then they changed the rules. See, then here's the thing. The occupation was held by the communists who didn't have jobs during the day, and they formed a unanimous consensus that unanimous consensus wasn't necessary anymore, and then my voice didn't matter anymore.
So it just became like Democratic majority vote.
Right.
Kind of
thing. Well, it was like government. If they didn't like the rules and the rules didn't work in their favor, they changed the rules to work in their favor.
Sure.
So we'll be back after this trip to the market, and we'll be talking more about Occupy, probably Black Lives Matters, and whatever else Will wants to talk about.
Awesome.
Can you say worms for us, Will?
Say worms.
Say worms.
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 Thank you.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgoristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agorist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, go with AgoristHosting.com.
Freedom Fiends. Oh yeah, and we are back. And we are talking with Will Moyer. And he's talking about how libertarians are meanies and crush dissent of leftist groups. And so now we were talking about Occupy Wall Street. And is there anything that you wanted to add to what was covered in the last segment?
No. I mean, I think that was. I still think the kind of general consensus from the libertarian movement was like this doesn't count as.
Oh yeah, I agree with the thesis completely.
Yeah.
Well. You had mentioned that there was a perception that a lot of them are economically illiterate, and like most of the burn victims out there, They're pretty bad.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of those criticisms are valid.
Yeah. So when you look at the idea that they are economically illiterate and they're part of the Free Schumer Brigade, isn't it kind of a valid idea to dismiss them as being loony birds?
Yeah, I mean, it totally can be valid. I think what's happening though is libertarians sometimes miss kind of the legitimate dissent that exists in these groups. Or miss an opportunity, like a space that's being created for outreach or to educate people and be like, yeah, you're upset about these problems. We've done all of this work and all this analysis and all this research explaining why the economy is the way that it is or why the state is bailing out bankers and kind of like building solidarity that way.
Now, you probably spent a lot more time at the Occupy rallies than I did, especially since I didn't go to any of them.
No, I didn't go to any either. I was out of the country for I was in China during Occupy, actually.
Okay, all right. I've seen plenty of video of people libertarians trying to do outreach to these folks and say, hey, look, do you know about the Federal Reserve, do you know about the money supply and inflation, hyperinflation, things like that, and trying to reach out to these people and offer an olive branch, and they were really getting slapped around, and they're like, no, government is our savior. It's
okay, hold on, man. I'm going to tell you a story. When I went to Occupy Augusta in Maine, yeah, most of them were dirty, filthy, commie hippies. But
all five of the protesters.
No, there was actually a lot. They took over the Capitol Park right in front of the Capitol building and camped out there for a couple of months in the dead of winter. So I give them props for that.
So half of Maine was there.
Right. So anyway, this was right in kind of in time with the whole Ron Paul evolution thing. And I'd say probably 20% of them came out of that actually questioning the Fed and starting to listen to Ron Paul, and they saw the message that a lot of us libertarians were trying to present, and even some of the minarchists there, because there were minarchists there, you know, that didn't like Wall Street either. So you had a good mix, and a few of them came out of it understanding that message, getting a basic grasp of that message of liberty. And it was interesting to watch them just kind of split off from the rest. They were like, all right, this isn't accomplishing anything. Then they went into the political process of caucusing for Ron Paul. No, but it's an evolution, right? And they went through that whole thing, and I watched that. I mean, I had friends that tried to get me to caucus for Ron Paul, and I was like, nah, you know, I'm an anarchist. Just go do your thing, and you'll see what's going to happen.
I'm already evolved.
And they saw, and now I think we're talking, what, 6 years later? 5-6 years later? And now you're starting to see those original filthy commie hippie people, they're actually becoming libertarian anarchists.
And wearing bow ties.
Yeah.
Now, okay, my personal experience of talking to the lefty types that went to Occupy is they really didn't change. And before I was so rudely interrupted by Chandler, I'm just kidding about the rudely.
Blowing it.
So anyway, what I saw was they said, no, it's all the fault of capitalism. And I've had numerous debates with these types of folks on Facebook, and they will just go through all sorts of mental gymnastics to explain how the bankers are responsible for the bailouts. It's like the bankers bail themselves
totally.
Out.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, just all these different things. It's really just horrible.
There's
horribly
like
bad
a
thought.
Mainstream liberal idea that the state is like this neutral this neutral tool.
Right. Yeah.
And the benevolent state.
Oh, it's a tool, all right.
Certain groups are kind of using it inappropriately, and the idea is to stop those groups from using this tool wrongly. Not the problem is not the tool itself.
They wanted to fix government.
It's
a feature, not a malfunction. I think that's what they're misunderstanding.
They want to ban one tool, but they want to reform and preserve the other tool. Yeah. The one that's far more deadly.
Well, no, they don't want to just preserve it. They want to enhance it.
That's what I said. Well, preserve and reform. Yeah.
All right. Well, you know.
He just used like different phraseology than you.
Right.
Okay.
What?
No, it's hashtag what?
Well, I don't even think they want to change the tool. They just want to use it for themselves. That's all.
Yeah, it's being used incorrectly.
Well, the key point, though, that Jeremy says they want it for themselves. Something that I usually throw out at least once a month is conservatives and liberals don't hate tyranny, they hate each other. And they're not willing to trade the ability to inflict tyranny on each other to get their own freedom. And when you look at, like, basically any type of political group, I include the Libertarian Party, they just believe that if they could be the ones to wear the ring, if they're the ones that can wear the boot, they could put it on somebody else's neck just right.
It's the definition of insanity, just attempting the same thing over and over and expecting different results, and people are just not getting it.
Well, I also think they don't want to get it because their main concern isn't about making a better world. It's about stealing the liberty of others and enhancing themselves.
Well, you know, I went to Jeffrey Tucker's two presentations yesterday and today, and today he brought up a really good point that before we start preaching freedom, liberty, and anarchism, the first thing we have to do is get people to admit the existence of the state. Most people that we call statists and make fun of, they don't even understand what the state is, and they won't acknowledge it.
Yeah.
You know, they just think it's a necessary part of society. And what I've long said is, in my arguments with these people, they can't see, they think that we want this utopia where everyone just gets along and it's a, you know, happy free market. The market will solve everything. And they think that that's a crazy utopia. But they can't understand because they're stuck and invested in the current system. So they can't understand how to get out of that system.
None of this is reason not to collaborate or communicate with them, though. Like, if you want a better example of, like, disagreement where libertarians get over it and still take the platform, it's running for office. Like, libertarians philosophically disagree with the politicians they go and talk to, but they still, like, work with them and use their platform and use their lingo, even though they're totally invested in that system. Like, so if they're willing to, like, go and engage in the platform of politics, even though they have these great disagreements with most people there, why can't they go and use the platform of anti-war rally, even though they may have a philosophical disagreement with a lot of people there?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's basically what I'm saying. So I agree with you.
I mean, for me, my like evolution in terms of my, I guess, my not political philosophy, but my like anti-political philosophy has been, it's been very organic for me to relate to people who I might not agree with their end goal necessarily, but, you know, certain aspects, like, you know, I have an aunt that's in Code Pink. And I was perfectly willing to participate in an anti-war protest with her, you know, despite the fact that, you know, she would be way more inclined to reappropriate, you know, stolen funds to social welfare programs away from war. But I still agreed with the anti-war aspect, you know, so.
Yeah, I think a lot of libertarians and anarchists are so purist that they're afraid to use these platforms to spread a message. I look at Will Coley and Daryl Perry. They didn't want to get elected. They wanted to bring awareness to the people and use the libertarian, you know, political platform to influence people's minds. And I think that's the way to go. I mean, how many times have we argued about how useless the political process is, even on the local level? You know, you want to win the hearts and minds. You want to get that message out there, because libertarians for so long have moaned and complained that, oh, the mainstream media ridicules us and ignores us. So they want to try to use any type of platform they can to get that message out.
I personally would like to see the debates where you have, like, you know, the Republican, Democrat, the LP, and then the straight up anarchists, mm-hmm. and all the our three statists are talking about, well, this is why you should vote for me, and then the anarchists are saying, well, no, this is why you should vote for nobody.
Right.
Yeah.
And
I would love to see that.
Equal representation there. So, well, what do you see as what do you envision as a way to break down these walls that separate the libertarians and, let's say, the leftists of Occupy, or maybe Black Lives Matter, or some of the other ones?
I think, just like you guys are describing, if the members of these movements aren't open to it or open to collaboration or, you know, solidarity from libertarians, then I don't know if you can do anything about it. But I think libertarians should examine what biases might be leading them to think more favorably about something like the Tea Party than about Occupy. Or more favorably about, like, the Oregon ranchers versus Black Lives Matter. Because I think what's happening is a lot of times there is just kind of a bias against, well, these people are associated with leftism, or their dissent is not meeting my standards for, like, respectability. They're not acting like libertarians who've done all this research and have, you know, journalists at Reason and educators at Mises and whatever at Cato.
Right.
And we're coming into the halls of seriousness and sitting down at the big kid table and presenting our case for, like, what's wrong with society and how to fix it. And these other groups, well, they're just getting upset and they're kind of acting out on their emotions and they're taking to the street and fighting cops. And that's not, like, legitimate. They don't fully understand the situation. I think libertarians kind of, like, judge that negatively, but I think that's a very powerful and real thing that happens. I think that's almost like a natural organism kind of reacting against infection, that these people are, like, something like the anti-Trump protesters. You know, a lot of the anti-Trump protesters are, like, Latinos, and they weren't out doing protesting or getting in fights with, like, Mitt Romney supporters, right? They see something in Trump's rhetoric or in Trump's support that they think is bad, is authoritarian or is fascist, and they're willing to take to the streets to fight it. And I think that's a, like, something libertarians should kind of solidarity with.
They're not carpenters, but they nailed it too. Trump for chancellor 2016. We'll be back, more Freedom Fiends after this.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. Rats is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateur, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. Rats was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolf. Rats is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download Rats free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
Now, Freedom Fiends, coming back at you live from Fiend Fest Somalia. So, I had the time of my life, and I owe it all to what? Lou? Lou, what do I owe?
Oh, wait. The Seven Dwarves.
The Seven Dwarves. Okay.
And this will be on pay-per-view anytime now.
All right.
Are we going down the line?
So, Nick, I had the time of my life, and I owe it all to...
Magic Fingers.
Magic Fingers. We talked about that last night.
Dobby. My turn?
Yeah.
I had the time of my life, and I owe it all to... a nymphomaniac.
Well, I guess that's my turn then. So, what was it? I had the time of my life, and it was all to a burning sensation in an awkward place.
Hey, Diana.
Oh, there she goes again.
Katzen laughing.
Breathe, Diana. And I had the time of my life, and I owe it all to...
And that I think she's having the time of her life over there.
So is that the us? I don't know. Is that the answer?
Oh, you can do a write-in.
Wearing clown makeup.
Well, I had the time of my life, and I owe it all to a hole-in-one. Oh. Anyway, back to, I forget your name, Will.
Will Moyer.
Yep, I'm here.
There you go. So, Nick, did you have a question for him?
Yeah. I think the most important point that I got from your talk today was the bias part. And I like that because I definitely fall into some of those traps because I came from a right-wing background. Sure. So I totally get that. So I don't like these leftist movements, and I can tell that I'm a little bit scared. But what I really liked is that, and I think what we kind of talked about and what we brought up here and what you talked about in your talk is that we can ridicule people, or maybe not ridicule, but we can criticize people.
Question.
Ridiculing is more fun.
It is more. It is a lot more fun. But it's good to criticize people with bad ideas, but also let's support those that have good ideas. And when they have good ideas, let's support them. Let's say, yeah, police brutality is bad. You are being oppressed. Let's recognize that, but let's also recognize that they take it too far. What, do you agree with that, or what are your thoughts on that?
That Black Lives Matter takes it too far?
Well, no, in that sense, that should we be recognizing where good work is being done?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, especially, I mean, like, things like the Ferguson riots or, like, Baltimore riots, where you have kind of, you know, an oppressed minority group who has been subjected to all kinds of horrible things by the state for decades and decades and decades. You know, the legal system and the war on drugs and policing and welfare programs that have kind of entrenched poverty. And then they're, you know, kind of taking to the streets to fight a militarized security force. I mean, I feel like libertarians should be all over that.
Occupation force. Security forces actually provide security.
Okay, true. Yeah,
that's true.
From what I saw of particularly Ferguson, which I believe was where Black Lives Matter was really
kind of born
out
there.
Of.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of libertarians that were supportive of the peaceful protesters that were complaining about the brutality because, as you mentioned, this has been going on for decades and decades. This wasn't a single event that everybody freaked out over.
Right.
You know,
it's been building.
It's a culmination, absolutely.
Each event was a bit of sawdust on the floor, and this just happened to be a spark. And where people really started to break off their support was it wasn't when the cops were shooting the media and peaceful protesters with tear gas. It's when people started burning down businesses instead of police stations. It's when instead of peacefully protesting, people were blocking traffic and screwing things up for other people who, you know, as horrible as it is when somebody dies, people still have to get to work on time. And when you have traffic getting blocked and screwed up. All right. You want to come back for one more?
I'll do it if you guys want me to, for sure.
Yeah, well, there were questions unanswered here.
All right, yeah, so. Unanswered questions, so.
Worms.
Chandler, do a quick card on the way out.
Why is the Dalai Lama always smiling? Because he knows...
male enhancement pills.
A lovely bunch of coconuts. An anatomically correct snowman.
My incredibly flexible yoga instructor.
Medical marijuana.
Watch out for the floor, please.
Money working at home? Join the high-stakes world of selling BIPCOT NoGov merchandise. The BIPCOT No Government License is licensed under the BIPCOT No Government License, which means that you can go to BIPCOT.org, download the high-res logos, and make your own BIPCOT No Government merchandise to sell. The best part is you keep all the profits. And if you send a picture and mail a sample to the good people at BIPCOT.org, they might even help you promote it for free.
As long as you're not a government or a government agent and you don't advocate for any governments in any way.
Help promote liberty, make money, have fun, meet interesting people, be the envy of all your friends. Be the coolest kid at FiendFest Somalia. Laugh at the state while it collapses, all while making and selling your own BIPCOT.org merchandise. What will you design? Get creative. Lots of folks are doing it, but there's always room for more. There are BIPCOT t-shirts, flags, drink cozies, turntable mats, BIPstrong bracelets, BIPCOT stickers, playing cards, and even Glock pistol backplates. You might even get mentioned on the Freedom Fiends. You're still kicking yourself for missing out on the start of Bitcoin. Don't miss out on BIPCOT. Get in on the ground floor now.
Not a guarantee.
Start your new life today at BIPCOT.org. That's BIPCOT.org.
Freedom Fiends, we're here at the second hour live from Fiend Fest Somalia, and I don't know where we're going next.
We are in the resort town of coastal Somalia called Merka, and Fiend Fest Somalia is sponsored by the State Free Project. So, would you like to BIPCOT us?
Yeah. We're also covered by the BIPCOT No Government License that allows reuse by anybody except governments or their agents. And you can find more about that at BIPCOT.org. That's BIPCOT.org.
And there's a sleeping guy in the back of the room that's also covered by BIPCOT. So, all right. Yeah, when we left the first hour, we were talking with Will Moyer, and we were talking about libertarianism, the biases against lefties, and crushing dissent, so to speak. So, yeah, we were talking about the Black Lives Matter when we left, and what I left off with was there was a lot of support for the actual real grievances, but when it turned into scumbaggery and debaggery, you know, the burning of businesses and stuff like that, a lot of that support disappeared. And as far as, like, the ranchers out in Nevada goes, they did receive a fair amount of criticism from libertarians, particularly True. Anarchists, because they're talking about how they want the Constitution to be enforced and followed.
Right.
So the part, like, where they could be indefinitely detained for domestic rebellion without a trial, they were informed of that, and how the militia can put down rebellions and things like right. that. And just pointing out that the Constitution really protects their rights in the same way that a get-well card cures Ebola.
Right.
So I think there was a lot of even-handedness with both of them. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there was to some degree, but as soon as kind of disruptive tactics started happening, I think that's like when you're saying libertarians kind of stop supporting it. But I mean, do libertarians who want to, like, you know, abolish the state or change the prison industrial complex, abolish prisons, these are massive social changes and changes to political structure. Do they think that that can happen without any kind of disruption to people's daily lives? Like, is people being late to work that bad of a price to pay for social change?
Well, what does it gain?
It depends on if they have a job, if they can feed their family after that.
Right, but I mean, this is kind of what happened. I'm not condoning political violence or anything, but that's kind of what happens when you have big social changes. Like,
yeah, but that's not a natural result of the social change of, like, getting rid of prisons. Like, maybe more criminals out on the loose is a social change we might have to deal with when you abolish prisons, but not people standing in the street for no reason. That's just as inconvenient and doesn't advance freedom.
I mean, I think that kind of brings things to the forefront. I think people's lives have to be disrupted a little bit when there is social change. I think it's just...
Yeah, that kind of sounds like collateral damage in a drone strike.
Well, yeah, because I think Derek's right. Like, what exactly does it prove? Because all it does is all that type of activity, at least what it seemed to do, and I think rightfully so, was agitate the heck out of people to the point where they were even more infuriated with these groups sure. than the state itself. I mean, I'm somebody who I'm not a big fan of political action at all. I'm more of the non-compliance route, and I think a lot more can be done through that method than even trying to reach some of these people. Because, I mean, I don't know, for the Occupy thing, like, I was close enough to it because I live in Long Island, so sure. I was close to the Occupy New York. Thank you, Diana. I met some people who were there and were either actually libertarians who were trying to outreach or actually became libertarians through that, like what Chandler was talking about before. But the large portion of those people either had no idea why they were there in the first place.
They ended up being co-opted by angry Democrats.
Yeah, and then they just got more angry and just wanted to lash out at the other side, and then the other side just saw them as being these evil people. That did not happen. All these evil people, the cycle just continues. So I don't see how that really gains anything by just making people even more mad. Like, sure, attention is brought to it, but it's not really great attention.
Yeah, and I get, like, kind of lack of strategy or tactics, just kind of blindly acting out. But I still think a libertarian ideal of massive social change that is kind of well manicured and based mostly on persuasion, I don't think that exists. I don't think that happens. I think if you look at a
don't
lot of...
Don't you do that in your life?
Doesn't
it exist for you?
Sure. I mean, I think that is a part of any kind of social change, but I don't think that is all of social change can happen through totally like I said, well manicured, well, like respectable descent that's peaceful and just persuasive in nature. I think most social change requires more disruption to sometimes people's
that
daily lives.
That is disruptive, isn't it?
I don't know. I mean, it's not the same kind of disruption, I think.
I would think that social change, like massive social changes, are going to start with us, with our lives, using the means that we use, which is persuasion. You know, like, we're not getting out in the streets and disrupting people's, standing in front of them, obstructing their freedom of movement. Like, I don't want to infringe on someone's freedom, you know? Like, I want to help them be more free. That's...
Sure. But, so, like, Black Lives Matter, taking to the streets and having rallies and protests, what about when it's not aimed at, like, the regular people, right? It's... Or something like Occupy, you know, in Zuccotti Park in New York. Like, is it bad that they're in the park, right? It might be disrupting people's lives. It might be disrupting what's normal usage of the park. Are they doing something wrong by doing that?
No.
Oh, okay. I mean, there was libertarians on.
I went to Zuccotti Park.
Right. Okay. But isn't that a form of disruption?
How?
Well, I mean, you're stopping whatever normally is happening in the park. There was libertarians
No. What happens in a park is people meet up and talk about ideas. I mean, that's happened for as long as humans have been around. And so that's what we did at Zuccotti Park, where people talked about, like, hey, we all see there's some big problem going on. Like, we don't know what exactly is going on, but we can get together and figure this out. And, like, a lot came from the Occupy movement and people meeting in Zuccotti Park and places all over the country, you know.
But there are libertarians on Mises saying Zuccotti Park is privately owned, you know, by some kind of real estate holding company in New York, and the occupiers were trespassers, and they're violating people's private property.
I don't want to make that argument, but I think where I would draw the line as a person who respects property is when the Occupy movement was blocking, you know, the bridges and traffic, and they were disrupting everyday life of people, good or bad, who didn't have an opinion, didn't care, just wanted to go to work, just wanted to go home, just wanted to engage in economic activity, and they disrupted that. That's where I would draw the line on that.
Yeah, I would call it a difference in degree, because by occupying the park and disrupting the ability of people to go there and hang out and do whatever they would normally do at the park, not a big deal. But when traffic is being stopped and somebody's going to be late for work or somebody's going to be late for picking their kid up from the sitter or any of these other things, you know, that's when you're getting into the...
Yeah, you're messing with people's lives.
Yeah. And essentially, if you're trying to mess with people's lives, because that's what the state does. There's no anarchist out there that said, you know what, the state isn't such a bad proposition, but I think I could do better. No, the state the state is intolerable, and that's why we become anarchists. So when these people engage in scumbaggery that makes them become intolerable, they're absolutely no different than the state. That's my opinion on it, and that's why I lose sympathy for these types of movements.
What about, so maybe this doesn't apply to you guys, but there's a lot of, I think, kind of valorization of, like, the American Revolution from libertarians, especially kind of culturally conservative libertarians.
Yeah.
And, you have things like the Sons of Liberty, who did all kinds of property damage and started, you know, provoked cops, threw rocks and stuff at cops. They tar and feathered British loyalists. These weren't people who were, like, working for the British or anything.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because Bob Murphy, who's very associated with Mises.org, was criticizing the Tea Party during the Ferguson thing. He says, wow, so people that formed a political party or political group based upon destroying private property and committing acts of violence and vandalism are getting angry at these people in Ferguson.
Yeah.
He put it much more eloquently than I just did, but he's one of those people that pointed that out.
I think it's a double standard.
And there was a lot of butthurt over it, and it was beautiful.
Yeah.
So, don't get me wrong, I'm not completely unsympathetic to the plight of these people, but when they start going off and just going willy-nilly, I just can't keep that support up for them.
I mean, we might be heading toward, like, a free speech debate, but a lot of times this happens because I think libertarians kind of have the, like, oh, well, if there's something bad happening in society or bad speech, you just fight it with, like, good speech. and that these people should just be kind of airing their grievances and trying to persuade people. But a lot of times this is maybe they have been, or they don't have access, or they have no platforms, and that like this kind of acting out, I don't want to call it acting out in a belittling way.
What does that mean? They don't have any platforms for speaking. They don't have mouths. They don't have.
So, you know, someone like, Trump talking about all of his kind of Fortress America stuff, building walls and deporting people and stopping protectionism. Like, he has a totally different platform than some, you know, Hispanic person in California who might be affected by it, right? And so they show up to his protest and they're, or they show up to his, you know, some one rally and they try to protest it. That's like their only means of kind of combating.
That's their only means? I mean, isn't there YouTube?
Okay, but YouTube is not
their blog posts.
YouTube is not the equivalent to what like a politician.
It's not. I mean, haven't you seen these politicians get destroyed by YouTube videos?
Or have you seen these politicians get 30,000 downloads on their videos like people do on YouTube?
Yeah, I think people have a fair chance to speak freely.
How much change do they make compared to these politicians?
It's their choice how much power they want. They want to have in speaking.
But how much change do they make is what I'm asking. So I think, I mean, you're right. We absolutely have the ability to get out a message, but how much has changed because of that compared to how much power those politicians have?
I think a lot. I think it's a completely different world thanks to YouTube. I think that the politicians and the elections that we're seeing now are completely different from the ones we would have seen before.
All right, that's a good point. Thanks for coming on the show tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Plug your, where can we find you?
You can find me at willmoyer.com or at willmoyer on Twitter. And you can find my podcast at whydoyoucare.fm or just search for Why Do You Care on iTunes or wherever you download podcasts.
Excellent.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
All these fiends scurrying across the floor.
Some of us were prepared, a bumper music comes in.
Oh, my God. Oh, for crying out loud. Way to go, Graceful. Wow. That it's a good thing it's so late at night because that can't go on radio, what you guys were doing. My God. That needs to be censored.
We're not on in Iran.
It can't go on radio because it's physical comedy on the radio.
Or Saudi Arabia.
Well, it was kind of dirty. It's, you know.
So, no one can resist what?
Oh,
man.
I don't have one.
A stud.
Obamacare.
Conjugal visits.
A frisky televangelist.
An over-enthusiastic proctologist.
Oh, God.
Landing strips.
Does anybody have a beer in here? Anyone?
Landing strips.
Like, please, two or three.
Is that what you got, Nick, was landing strips? We were talking about that earlier, remember?
Yes, I did remember. So I think we have a guest out in the audience that's going to come and join us for a segment or two.
Bomb, bomb, bomb.
Dun, dun, dun.
We need like the Price is Right music right now.
Dun, 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 dun.
Hello!
Hi, Ernie. Welcome to the Freedom Fiends.
Thank you. More than wonderful to be here. I'm sorry, am I supposed to say more?
Yeah. Dead air is bad.
Yeah, I'm not even paying attention.
No dead air on my show, damn it. I'm this is my, God, 7th, 8th Pork Fest. We've been broadcasting the show here for a long time. We've been involved. I have a presentation on Thursday, why I'm so optimistic. You know, we have a lot of tech and a lot of innovation that I'm going to share with people. I've been covering
science and tech on Freedom's Phoenix for a long time, to the point that we now have our own category, Top Tech News. And I'm just going to share it with all the guys so that you can see, man, the man is getting evolved out. I mean, it's just, you know, I tell you, this is my new word picture. You have, like, governments like that, you know, cop that's chasing you on the lone highway in your rear view mirror as you're going down the road, and you see in your rear view mirror the sun setting and the woo-ah car with the lights going on, and it just kind of slips over the horizon, and you forget it was even there as we go plaid into the future.
And don't forget the heat waves coming off of the street.
Right. From space balls.
Am I crazy, or does this not end with someone driving off of a cliff?
He's gone plaid. You know, they have now, I thought,
ludicrous speed.
Well, you know, ludicrous speed, they have that on the Teslas now.
What?
You know? Yeah, they got what? Ludicrous speed. You can program it in. It's ludicrous
what?
Speed.
Do they have, can you jam their radar?
Yep. Oh. And they're doing a plaid paint job on one of the Teslas.
That's awesome.
You know, and then, of course, you know, SpaceX, they call it the Falcon. That was named after the Millennium Falcon.
Mm, but what about the Winnebago?
You know, I use that, too. This is, I'm going, you know, with new graphene coating, you know, carbon and so on, you're going to be able to wrap a Winnebago for the weight of a cell phone and go to space. I mean, this is, I'm really looking forward to Thursday. You guys are going to be impressed. There's a lot of stuff coming.
I caught part of your preview. I think it was yesterday. You were filling in for somebody.
Yeah.
Giving a presentation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I really love that line. We're going to
space and government's not invited.
Yeah, and you can't hear government crying and whimpering in space. It
no,
makes no,
you know,
sound.
We had a sign when Spaceship One went up in June of 04. We made a bunch of signs and went out there. And we were the only ones with signs, and one of them was Spaceship One, Government Zero. And that went planetary. And another one was, you can't hear the government in space.
Can't hear the government scream in space.
Yeah, you can't hear the government scream in space, right. So I'm just going, it's been a wild ride for anyone that's a hardcore, understands the power of the philosophy, you know, voluntarist, leave me aloneist, libertarianist, whatever. And the whole thing has been that there's a lack of faith. People just, they don't really believe in the philosophy. They prefer it. It would be nice if we could only convince. But if you're so certain that it's the right philosophy, just voluntarist, leave me aloneist, you can predict what's coming. And it's coming. You know, the different software and hardware and cryptography and materials and innovations and everything. It's just, and it's not geographical, it's generational. So it's planetary, and that's what I hope to share Thursday.
How nervous do you think the government confronted with this technology they can't control?
You know, I used to think that they would be more afraid. It's not really government. It's individuals that use the government.
Yeah.
It's, oh.
Hey, Ernie, finish that when we come back. Going to market.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Are you sick of seeing peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
You with liberty since 2011 or something like that.
Precariat.
Oh yeah, precariat. I gotta tell you, precariat.
Hey, we're back with Ernie Hancock of Freedom's Phoenix, and Chandler had asked before we went to break if government was scared of all this technological advancement and being shown as how obsolete they are. And the answer is yes. And you can tell that from all the pre-K programs that they're coming out with, because they're at the point now that they're going to have to, like, start getting them right out of the womb to go with the indoctrination and brainwashing.
I tell you, government is not, it's insulation for the real power. You know, they're the elected officials of I'm the guy and I did and I'm Gum Schumer and I'm banging my hand and we got to stop whatever the heck it is. But it's not their original idea. They're just the insulation for the real. It's like a wire, and you see the insulation, but the real power is behind that.
What is that? What's the real power?
So Bilderberger, when they started doing this, one of the leaked out agenda items was we have to deal with the precariat. And I go, precariat? Okay. What the hell is a precariat? Well, they define it as...
That doesn't sound like it tastes very good.
Well, it's a group of... The generation next that went to school, they got big, enormous debt. They come out, no job, a big debt, and they start, well, I'll just do tiny house or whatever in a HUD. Nope, that's a RV, and you can't even camp on your own land for
it's
more than 14
days. It's the precarious proletariat.
Well, the precariat, what they say is that these are the people that have a precarious existence, okay? That's why they call them, it's a new word. And then I started researching a couple years ago, there was an economist out of the UK that wrote a book about this precariat thing. Well, their answer, and you're starting to hear a lot about this, to keep them under check, we have to have a living wage, not just a minimum wage, how much per hour. They're talking about actually redistributing the wealth and people getting a monthly check. So here's enough for you to survive.
So just everyone gets a living wage from the government, and then maybe they work on top of that.
You get a wage. You get a wage. You get a wage.
You get your sea container stacked on top of the rat cage of you get public transport in the downtown urban of the whatever the heck. And this is what they're coming up with as an answer. Freedom is never the answer to them. I mean, I'm like, freedom's the answer. What's a freaking question? But to them is no. We gotta control. If you're not in control, you're out of control.
What we need is a bigger trough that would keep the pigs in the pen.
Well, and they're trying to discourage the individuality because that's what's going to lead to that freedom.
That's their threat.
Yeah,
that's one thing. That's why the Matrix was such a big deal. When it first came out, and as it went on, they start to realize what was the problem in the system. It was choice. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed the choice. We want you to believe you have a choice, right, so you'll stay plugged in, But once you start to realize you don't really have a choice, you're going, no, I'm outside. And that's what they're afraid of. And it's not a geographical thing. It's a generational thing, and it's worldwide. And the technology presentation I hope to do, just to give you an idea of how I – I'm an older guy, I'm 55, but I was a lot of these young guys years ago, and I remember before the internet. I remember as fax trees. I remember, signs and doing, and it's just been a really, really, really enthusiastic realization of all the things that I was promised as a kid. I was promised the Jetsons started in 62, man.
Yeah.
I had the Star Trek was going on, and they gave me, all kinds of promises.
I want my holodeck. Where's my holodeck?
That's what I'm waiting for.
Here it comes.
My thing is just more the Jetsons and flying cars. Like, I mean, why is that like not a total thing now?
Dude, where's my
government? Government regulation.
Government. Oh, yeah. Let me tell you who's really the bad government, okay? But it was not. It's not government. It's the people that use government as their tool to rule.
Right.
And if you understand that, then you can start to see. I participate in the political process and run all the time. Be a butthead. I just don't vote. But when I run for like Secretary of State, my signs are still voting with the V and voting the V for Vendetta. I'm like, are you kidding me? So this, and that gets voted most popular sign in that election year. So it's just. It's an attitude that we're selling. It is a culture thing. It's just public opinion.
Well,
it's just opinion. When everybody has the opinion that this sucks, the politicians run and jump in front of that parade. Yeah, I'm what they said. What are you guys saying? Oh, yeah, what they said. It's just public opinion drives everything. And that's why I'm so enthusiastic about, programs like the Freedom Fiends and efforts like the Free State Project, even though I'm not into kind of political, I don't care. But, you bring a bunch of voluntarists or leave me aloneist into anywhere, and it's an injection of the infection into the bone marrow of whatever culture you're at.
The fiend bone marrow.
And it has no cure for that. You know, there's how do you unlearn the truth? And this has changed so dramatically when the internet really started getting going broadband. And Freedom's Phoenix, we had that concept back in the mid-90s, and we were waiting for video to hit the internet. Video hit the internet. That'll never happen, you know? And I go, yeah, well, we'll just wait. When it did, that's when we launched, and we're into our 11th year now. So we've been doing this a while. So there's a lot of optimism out there, and we get bogged down in a lot of things. And in your previous guest, when you were talking about Occupy, whether it was the Tea Party or Occupy, we were there with thousands of videos. We shipped them all over the country. We were just being real buttheads. When it's Arab Spring, we had thousands of DVDs of Philosophy of Liberty and a bunch of other stuff, and translations of the Declaration of Independence, Constitution, the Bill of Rights that Cato gave us that we sent to Tahrir Square that was translated in Arabic and English. And on the Constitution page, we put a little mailing label in Arabic that said, "We already tried this. Maybe you can do better." You know, because I want to give an endorsement of this, you know, re-rule you plantation thing.
Yeah,
but the Declaration of Independence, Bill of Rights rocks pretty good. So it's just this attitude, because I didn't want the people in Egypt begging for, "We need Pharaoh number 374. Yeah. You know, I'm going, "No, you guys don't get it. It's about self-ownership." That concept is infectious, and it's global. And a lot of people didn't see it. They still don't. But for me, it's inevitable. And the thing that we're really waiting on and preparing for is a decentralized internet that can't be audited, censored, surveilled. When that happens, we're setting up everything that we can to try and populate it as soon as possible. So we're waiting on that.
Yeah. There was something, I'm pretty sure that you mentioned it yesterday, and I've heard a lot of people talking about it lately. It's the impact of people ridiculing government and the state itself, and not just ridiculing like, "Oh, that was a boneheaded move," but the actual ridicule of, "My God, it is so Feinsteining horrible." Yeah, the fact that Cthulhu and Smod are
gaining Odette
and Vermin Supreme.
They're gaining in popularity. And when people are actually contemplating writing in Sweet Meteor of Death, Giant Meteor, whatever the troll candidate is, that's a beautiful thing.
Well, I think one of the big things that people need to learn first, they get so obsessed in this presidential nonsense like Trump and Clinton, you know. People need to understand that that's just figureheads. That's just your representative of tyrannical government. You need to understand that it's these bureaucracies. It's these guys that have been in these bureaucracies for 30 years. Those are the people that are really damaging you. But they put these puppets out in front of you to argue about, "Oh my God, what if that evil Hillary," and by the way, I think she's the Antichrist, but, you know, whatever. If she gets
a really bad outfit.
If she gets elected, you know, it's the end of the world, or if Trump, and they fail to see the inner system, like you were talking
and
about the wire.
Difference.
Yeah.
You know, see, that was the one thing that I realized early on in my activism. You know, my wife and I started becoming aware in 88, and we never even heard of liber what. I mean, you know, so it was. There's something wrong. You always feel like you're the only one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I go, I can't
you're
be the only
remnant.
One. And that's what happens is you start coming across all these libertarians. They go, "God, didn't you get the memo? Of course it's corrupt. That's the way it's probably going." Okay, well, at least somebody agrees. And as time went on, you started to see that this is an old philosophy. These arguments are just repeated.
Yes.
This is stuff that we've known from a long time ago. So, and it's, I think it is humanity. It's like Shakespeare, you know, like how like an angel. I mean, you know, the people are so capable of so much more. They just got to get this yoke off of their neck.
Yeah.
And it's one that they placed on and tightened themselves.
Yeah.
And when you have, like I have 4 kids. I'm 55. I have 10 grandchildren. Okay.
What?
So I am like every Monday is grandma and grandpa day. I do reruns on Mondays because I'm sitting there playing with the kids. And we go through a bunch of, we're going to learn something, man. There's the internet. And they ask a question. Oh, let's go find out. My son comes to me, one of my sons, he goes, "Man, the kids, they're asking too many questions. Make it stop, man." You know, I'm going, "Hey, man, you asked, and you got all the, you got the long answer."
So do you guys read, like, the kids' version of The Law and iPencil and stuff like that?
You know, the smaller ones are only, the oldest is in first grade, 6 years old. just finished first grade.
Oh, that's great.
And you got to be careful in how much you OD them on, you know, stuff. But she did pick up on the Pledge of Allegiance thing. Because when she's in preschool, she's 3 years old, and we go Grandparents' Day. They do a little this and ABCs and whatever, and they start saying the Pledge of Allegiance, and we're doing video camera, and all the grandparents snap to attention, click their heels, and I pledge allegiance. How loud can it? And Donna's got it, and I got our video camera. We turn it around to the audience, and I'm like, holy crap, look what's going on. This is like a Nazi parade, and they're, you know, waving the flags and stuff. So I go to my granddaughter, and I say, do you know what the pledge is? I don't know. What's I? Well, that's me. What's pledge? I don't know. What's allegiance? I don't know, you know. So the first of the year, this year in September, she's in first grade, and she comes up to me and she says, Papa, they call me Papa. She goes, Papa, I don't say the Pledge of Allegiance. The teacher's in the back of the room, and she's like student of the planet and all that kind of stuff.
Of course.
You know, so she's, I don't say the pledge. I go, cool. You know, so you know what, whatever, you know, that's cool. And let's go play.
That's cool.
And then she comes back a few weeks later and she says, yeah, like somebody ratted her out or something. So the teacher went to the front of the room, you know, to check. And she goes, the teacher's in the front of the room now. I go, do you say it? And she puts her head down. She says, well, if I don't say it, I have to sit on the bench in recess. So I had John Rutherford from, John Whitehead from the Rutherford Institute on. I was telling him that story, and he goes, oh, I got case law. Oh, you can't punish kids for, oh, we're going to get some.
No prayer in school.
Yeah, see, we can make a big deal out of it, but I really wanted her to understand, and they didn't want to make a big deal. But the point is that at a very young age, if they can understand that they own themselves and they're being indoctrinated, that it kind of goes from there.
And we will be right back. More Ernie Hancock on the Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
The Freedom Fiends now have a free app for your Android phone, tablet, phablet, or other chromed robot turd, available now from the Google Play Store, Amazon, and freedomfiends.com. Lovingly handcrafted by head hamster Michael W. Dean, the artisanal Freedom Fiends radio app allows you to listen live, keep up with the podcast, chat directly with other fiends, get discounts on bigger buttons, brainwash yourself with a 24/7 random episode, and so much more. You know the Freedom Fiends is the best libertarian radio show in the world, but when the fiends aren't live, you can use the app to listen to LRN.FM from anywhere. The Freedom Fiends radio app is like having a virtual libertarian re-education camp in your pocket. It's your gateway to the exclusive, high-demand group that is the Freedom Fiends. Install the Freedom Fiends radio Android app today. It's free, and of course, it's covered by the BIPCOT no government license. Tell two friends, review it on Google Play and Amazon, prepare for the inevitable death of terrestrial radio, and get ready for LibPair with the Freedom Fiends radio app for Android. Worms.
I want you to tell me, Siri, I really wish you were good at...
Oh, my God.
Do we even know what Siri is?
Anyone?
I think most people understand.
I thought you were actually asking your phone. I was expecting
your phone to tell us what
Siri was good at.
Yeah, no.
Siri is good at a Ken doll.
Siri is good at riding bareback.
Siri is good at flogging.
Siri is good at inhaling.
Siri is good at a booty call.
Siri is good at kinky porn.
So I actually, speaking of Siri, I actually asked Siri when the more recent Game of Thrones season came on. I asked Siri, is Jon Snow dead? And it said, I don't know. Try rebooting. That seems to work.
Siri. I can get smoky in here.
No, it's like smoky. I can't.
Yeah, it's Joe's.
What in the world?
Joe's vape. Yeah, I have no idea.
Oh, it's good.
What is that? Is that an incense or something?
No, it's the vape.
It's vape.
I had no idea what it was. I kept wiping my glasses off. I thought my glasses were
turned. Syrup in my coffee.
So anyway, Redemption in the Third Act. Nick, you had a question for Ernie?
Yeah, no, I thought it was interesting. We were talking about disruption, or what were we talking about? We were talking about
dissent.
But we were also talking about how
just something.
Will was making the point that disruption was something that we might that we should be interested in as libertarians, and we brought up, I think Derek hit on, that we have YouTube. And I don't remember if you said this, but that's kind of a version of disruption. And I think that's what you were talking about, Ernie.
That was the big thing that we were waiting on.
Right? This is the libertarian version of disruption, these Cthulhu signs, Vermin Supreme, and still voting, right? That's the peaceful disruption that we give. We don't need to stop people at the bridge. We can do this.
Yeah, I think the problem, I've old enough and been around long enough, decades, to see inside the political process and certainly the Libertarian Party. I just went to the National Convention in Orlando, and I was really encouraged that this, for the first time, we saw, like, the national chair now is from Arizona, and I remember him. He got ermitized when he was 12 years old. His dad used to bring him to meetings. And now he's national chair, and I already know the rhetoric that he grew up with from his father and exposure to us in Arizona and so on. Then you had a lot of the young people that were around, you know, Austin Peterson and McAfee and Daryl Perry and William Cauley kicked ass. You know, that was awesome. And you could see the culture change inside. And I know that, you know, the powers that be and some money, oh, you know, for $10,000 at the right time, they could buy the Libertarian Party. I mean, you know, so it is, fortunately, there's been a cultural shift that has made it to where dissent doesn't take the form of, ooh, we got a better candidate to rule you with. It's more like, you have candidates? I mean, you know, it's a whole different mindset of just, you know, I break with thee, and you throw dog poop on the government's shoes and you go look for another one or something. I mean, you know, it's a different mindset. And these kind of questions of about how we're going to get the brass ring and it's our turn to rule has been replaced with, we don't really need rulers, certainly not in this way. And it's not just limited to the United States geographical area. It's a whole generation that's connected with, heck, you know, we translate Femus Phoenix into 39 languages, and a lot of kids that come over and we do some work with and everything out of Europe, and they go, I don't know why you do that. We all speak English. You know, this caveman talking Polish. I don't know what the hell you're talking about. You know, we all speak English. So if you're under 40, 30 years old, they're speaking English. So they have a program called Language of Liberty done by a guy named Glenn Kripe out of Phoenix, that Scottsdale there, that has all of these programs. They just had a recent one in Morocco. And it's all Language of Liberty. They're teaching these kids freedom in a bunch of English script. I mean, you know, like Locke and Adam Smith and so on, and all this English writers, and they're doing really well. They got all kinds of, they had Ron Paul meetups and everything in Europe.
So we're just going to hit the youth.
Thanks.
Sending Archimedes, Generation Next. Here we go.
Real quick, Ernie, what do you think about the whole James Weeks at the Libertarian Party convention?
James Weeks?
Oh, yeah, like the stripper.
Oh, I thought it was cool. A lot of the stodgy Republican-esque, I wanted to flog him on stage and all that kind of stuff. And I'm going, look, somebody expressed himself. Nobody got shot. Nobody cared. It's a good meme and media push for New Orleans in 18. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah.